The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
Hi, this is Ben Wright Human, author of the webcomics Cost Pain and the Letters of the Devil, and you are listening to the PVD Cast.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 242. Thank you for listening to this episode, and once again, I hope all is well with you, your friends, and your family, that you're staying safe and healthy. I am going to say that this episode is going to be a little bit different than a typical PVD Cast episode. For avid listeners of this podcast, you know that I like to attend comic book conventions. When I've gone to comic book conventions, say Wizard World here in Columbus, or the Monroe Pop Fest up in Michigan, or wherever, I often will interview some of the guests, some of the writers, some of the artists, some of the convention goers, you know, sometimes. And so I take all those interviews, you know, they're usually about 5 minutes, and I take them all and I put them together into a PVD Cast episode. Well, I'm going to do kind of the same thing. You know, I'm going to take two conversations with two celebrities and put them together as one episode. And there's a little bit of a background to how these two conversations came about, and I'll talk about them here in a minute. But the first celebrity I am going to be speaking with on this episode is Haliah Jones. Haliah is a Canadian actress and musician, most known for her role as Eden Hawkins on Netflix hit show Lock and Key. And the second conversation is one with the actress Lori Lathene, who is known for her role as Denise on The Day After, and Lori on the back-to-school special The Wave, and also was Charlene Matlock in an episode of Matlock. The backstory for how these two conversations, these two interactions, these two interviews, whatever you want to call them, came about was through a little bit of collaboration. Haliah had contacted my friends over at the Three Geeks podcast about coming on and talking about Lock and Key and her music and whatnot. So we decided to collaborate a little bit with this conversation, with this interview. And so I jumped on Zoom, and Haliah was an absolute wonderful, wonderful person to talk to. And so it was so cool to do that. And thanks, Three Geeks Podcast, for giving me the opportunity to do that. So you probably will hear Jason and Max and Mike and Scott and Dan throwing out some questions too, as well as myself. In the second part of this episode, Miss Lori Lathene appeared on a new podcast project that I don't think I've talked about here on the PVD Cast yet. But allow me to fix that right here and right now. Jason Taylor from the Three Geeks Podcast is a huge fan of Matlock, as am I. Yeah, I'm a big fan of Matlock. There's just something about that old Andy Griffith courtroom drama that just, I don't know. It's kind of nostalgic, mixed in with a little bit of humor, mixed in with a little bit of courtroom drama that just really makes me appreciate that television show. And so Jason and I decided to do a Matlock podcast called Matt Talk. And Jason reached out to Lori about coming on and talking about her time on Matlock. She was only on one episode, the pilot, and many people wanted to know, well, what happened? What happened? Why was the character of Charlene recast? And so she came on and she gave us a great conversation and she answered all of our questions, and we really appreciate it. So I thought I'd do a little cross promotion between Matt Talk and the PVD Cast and put her conversation that she had with Jason and I up here on this episode as well. So with that being said, I think I have to take care of one little thing before we get to both of these conversations, and that is to remind you that today's episode is brought to you by World's Greatest Comics. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. They've got tons of comics from every single era, whether you're talking about the Golden Era, Silver Era, Bronze Era, or the Modern Era. And they have tons of other back issues, graphic novels, single issues, toys, collectibles, comic book supplies. Heck, they even got an awesome pool system. So if you're afraid that you might miss a single issue of your favorite comic, just sign up, man. Sign up, and that's taken care of, and that's a worry off your plate. So check them out online at wgcomics.com. You can also find them on Facebook at WG Comics. And again, you could stop by the store. That is, again, 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. And let them know that you heard about the store from me right here on the PVD cast. And I also need to remind you that every single Monday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, you can catch the live broadcast of the PVD cast on Redline Radio. And how do you do that, you may ask? Simply go to RedlineRadioLLC.com or go over to the Facebook page. It's also under the title Redline Radio LLC. Or you can download the app. If you have an Android phone, just go to the Google Play Store, look for Redline Radio LLC, download the app, and you can take the station with you wherever you go. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, you're going to hear my conversations with Haleah Jones and Lori Lathene.
All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Three Geeks Podcast. It's Jason joined by Max, John, Dan, Scott. We got our buddy Brian from Michigan and special guest Haleah. Is that how you say your name?
Haleah.
So, as usual, check us out on all social media, Three Geeks Podcast, all that fun stuff. So, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. It's a gray day outside, which is, you know, a gray day. But so far, so good. Had my coffee, and now I'm talking with you all. So, it's a good day.
Are you in LA or are you up in Canada?
I'm in Canada.
Okay.
Okay, I gotta know, what does Haleah mean?
Haleah is a name my mom, I'm so used to it. A name my mom came up with, during my parents' honeymoon in Maui, Hawaii, and, named after a volcano in in Maui called Haleakala. So my mom shortened it and took out, added an L, and, now I have a name hardly ever anyone pronounces right at first guess, but I'm okay with that.
You know, I'm kind of sad she didn't go with the whole thing, you know, like,
oh,
like,
yeah,
with the whole thing, and then you can make Haleah on your own, you know, like,
yeah. Well, as a kid, I was one of those kids that was like, my name is super cool, it's Haleakala, and then I took like my mom's middle name and my middle name and like just made a really long name for myself. As if Haleah isn't hard enough on its own.
Yeah, I mean, like, but then, like, people you don't like, you could just give them the full name and make them try. You know, just like.
Oh, yeah. Just give it. Yeah, for sure. You know, I've had many times of just trying to correct people. Like, I remember my fourth grade teacher just always called me Haleah. And I'm fine with people mispronouncing it because, you know, like, there are unique names out there that, you know, aren't Hillary or whatever, but when it's intentional, where it gets to the point where you're not trying anymore, it's like, I'm not going to change my name for you. This is my name, and it's up to other people to understand that name. And I think that goes for every name out there that's not a basic name that everyone hears every single day. So I don't take it personally at first, but after a while, it's kind of like, okay, let's work on this.
How was the pandemic in Canada? Because I'm kind of curious how other states, other regions, other countries in this instance are dealing with this horrific situation we find ourselves in with COVID-19.
Yeah, I was hoping that I didn't mishear you or that you said how was the pandemic, because it is very much still on. No. Like, we got to talk about some things right now. Honestly, for me personally, unfortunately for many people, it's been a very devastating thing. And I understand that. And I see that. For me personally, I've experienced it as a blessing in disguise, My brother and I, he's a musician, I'm a musician, acting, all this stuff. So we have very busy lives that keep us up until 4 a.m. and have crazy all over the place schedules. And my parents are snowbirds, so we hardly ever see family. We're hardly ever together. So my brother and I basically have moved out of our apartments and moved up north with our parents. And so we've been here for about 2 months now, and we're working on an album together. And so it's been nice in that personal Great. Bubble. In the way of the pandemic in the city, I'm in Toronto. It was really interesting. I live like right in the core where it's pretty loud. And for about 2 weeks, it was just like dead silence. It was very strange and eerie for some time. But yeah, people followed it pretty well. And then, you know, I think everyone got bored of it. Like, we're seeing all over the place now. And then they were like, oh, let's go and crowd Trinity Bellwoods, which is a huge park in downtown Toronto that was just down the street from my house. And so it's been interesting. I feel incredibly lucky to have a place outside of the city to spend with my family, and I've been trying to make use of it by saying it's okay to do whatever I want to do, you know, just like sit and just think and like not feel like I have to do something all the time, but still activating my creativity and keeping on top of being active and being creative and doing something with my time. Like a lot of reading and educating and stuff like that. So it's been different for a lot of different, like a lot of my friends have experienced it in vastly different ways, but I feel really blessed and privileged and grateful to be able to spend it with my family. So that's a good thing coming out of it.
Yeah. You got to make the best of the situation, you know, whether it's, you know, picking up a new hobby or reconnecting with friends via social media or whatnot. Yeah. So yeah, most definitely. Well, you're most known for your role as Eden Hawkins on Netflix's show, Lock and Key. Mm-hmm. So would you take us through the process of landing that role?
About 3 years ago, I got with my agent, started auditioning, and I got this audition. And the Eden's name was actually Tara at first. So that's like the first thing I remember about it. And it was an in-room audition compared to a self-tape at home audition. And I like in-room auditions because you could go in and you can make like the casting director laugh a little bit and have like a little rapport. And I'm a very bubbly, outgoing person. So I feel like that's my comfort area, which I guess they're not going to be doing in-room auditions for a very long time. but I went in and I actually fumbled one of the scenes so many times, and the casting director was so great and gave me I think 3 tries or something. So I walked out of that audition being like, I'm not getting that role. Like, I just completely screwed that up. But I got a call a few weeks later, and usually it's either you hear within a couple of days or like weeks later that you've booked something. But I got a call from my agent and saying that like, the papers are pretty much there. Like, I think you've got it. And me being naive and new to it, I was like, oh, that's good. Like, other casting directors will see that I booked something. Like, that's cool. And my agent, like, silence on the other side of the phone, and they're like, Halia, this is in a different stratosphere than that. Like, this is a different thing. So I was kind of very surprised to see how big it was, because I was like, I feel very lucky to, in the early stages, to have been a part of something as big as Lock and Key. And I don't think I really realized how huge it was until the premiere night at the Egyptian Theater in Hollywood. Like, that was walking that red carpet and just like seeing these big interviews and like a bunch of fans like lining up down the street. Quick, funny story. The day of the premiere, I was walking down Hollywood with one of my best friends and my mom, and we're just walking along. And then all of a sudden my mom sees a sign. She's like, hey, that's Lock and Key people. And there was this long line of people beside this tattoo shop. And I thought it was like free tattoo day. Like, I don't know. Like, I just thought it was a long line of people. And, on this little sign, it said lock and key waiting area. And that was for the premiere of all the people who did all of like the, you know, woo, people coming, like that kind of thing. And so I stopped and I started chatting with people. And because I'm not part of the comics, they didn't know who Eden was, but they okay. sure knew who she was after watching it. And that was my first run-in with like being a part of something that was way bigger than me, which I found really cool. So it's been a huge process of a new experience for me, which has been really fun.
I want to get into the music, but I have to ask you a question. One of my favorite comedies out right now is Working Moms, and you got to be in an episode. What was that like?
So that was, funny enough, my first ever audition. And on my way to the audition, my agent told me that they were actually looking for someone older, but go in anyway. And I think I just sassed them so much. I gave them so much sass that they were looking for that they were like, yep, this girl's got the sass for this. But yeah, that was fun. It was just a day shoot. It was just a quick little shoot, but it was fun. It was my first time being on set with actors I had seen, you know, on Working Moms. And I don't watch a lot of TV, but I had seen a few episodes of Working Moms before that. And it was cool. It was really cool. And one of my best friends is an actual, like, a mom, and she loves that show. So it was a very exciting time for both of us.
Going back to Lock and Key for a moment, how did you prepare for the role of Eden? Did you have a lot of leeway since the character's kind of newer to the world of Lock and Key? Did you get a little more leeway to just kind of, you know, go with the flow and see what works? Or was there kind of more stringent parameters as to how you could play that role?
I think from the conversations I had with Meredith and Carlton and Kevin, the producers and showrunners, what they most liked about my audition was that I made them laugh. And I think a lot of people went in to audition for Eden just being like brutally mean. And I think, you know, to add a depth to a character is to give that, you know, the smile with the horrible words, you know, and putting that together was what they really liked. And so for me, this is a whole new process of creating a character, because everything before Lock and Key was like a 2-day on set job at most. And so with Lock and Key, it was 6 months of, you know, sometimes filming several days within a month, sometimes filming like 1 or 2 days in a month. So there was this constant going into work and reading the script of what we were doing that day and knowing that this is who Eden is. Okay, where is she today? Well, you know, what is she feeling today? And that was a new process and challenge as a budding actor of learning about myself within Eden and bringing out those parts of myself and implementing them into Eden that I was learning through the whole process, which was very exciting. And I'm sure season 2 is going to be a very strange world of trying to, like, you know, challenge myself in the way of, let's no spoilers, but like of what's going on in Eden's head next season. And I feel like the people who take on biopics and characters who are already written, people who love the comics already have an idea of who Kinsey is and who Tyler is and who Nina is, who Sam is, and how they talk in your head and how they, you know, have all these little things. And then taking on that role as an actor is a really, I find that's hard. That's really hard because people have an idea, preconceived idea of who you are. So I feel lucky with Eden to be able to have leeway of creating this idea of who she is and kind of playing around with that and going off of what we know works, but also trying new things. So that was a very interesting experience for sure.
Could I ask a question here? Just say that my family watched the show religiously, loved it. It was family friendly, so we appreciated that. And your character was so effective because in the beginning she was so not likable, and you just nailed this character, and that's a sign of good acting. But the scene where you're being controlled, seems to me like you almost had to have like dance capabilities. And I'm wondering, was a lot of that improv, or was it like, you know, choreographed, or a little bit of both?
It's my favorite question, because it's my favorite scene ever. I think it's my favorite scene I might ever do in my whole career. When I originally read that scene, I thought they were going to throw me in and just say, go figure it out. Netflix doesn't work like that. I had two movement coachings and choreography sessions with Roberto Campanella and Lindsay Somers, who so an intimacy coordinator and a choreographer. And we kind of worked together on it. And truth be told, I wasn't a dancer growing up, contrary to popular belief. But I've always been athletic and flexible and very like hand-eye coordinated, I guess, and I knowing how to, you know, work my body, whatever. And so we did two sessions together of figuring out like how to make this work with this. And yeah, that it was definitely not a throwing it into the wolves, figure it out kind of situation. All of the filming of that scene, we did everything multiple times except for the last shot. So as soon as you see Eden with the hand coming up and taking her back and going straight to the mayo or whatever it was, ranch, that was done one time, and that whole spill thing was done one time because, you know, you have to go and wash and do your makeup and stuff like that again. But yeah, I had some padding on, not much. I'd never wanted to use a stunt double. They had one for me if I wanted, but I was like, nope, I'm going to do this. I'm going to try it. I want to have fun. And Mark, the director, was just fantastic in helping me through it and making sure I was comfortable and, you know, really making me feel like I was kicking ass. So it felt good.
Oh, it was awesome.
Thank you so much.
When you get to play a mean or an evil character, now there's like two ways it can go, and obviously like your character's got an arc, and you know, so she may, you know, we might get to see her side of things. But do you go for that, like, I want to be like Prince Joffrey, like that guy had to go like volunteer in Africa somewhere after he played Joffrey because like everyone hates that guy, even though like he did such a good job playing this you know, this character, that you literally hate the dude. You can't take away Joffrey from that kid's face. So did you shoot for that when you were bringing that into the role, or were you like, I kind of want people to want me around after this?
Yeah, so as an actor, you kind of go through this weird psycho analysis of like, am I this person? Are people going to think I'm this person? Are they going to think I'm horrible? And the actor who played Joffrey, like, I'm pretty sure he had to quit acting because of just like, you get typecast in that. And I think before Lock and Key, I had this fear of being typecast as the popular mean girl. And here I am. But I think it's up to me to, outside of acting, do all I can to completely step out of that, because that's not who I am. And I really want to work with, you know, anti-bullying organizations and everything that's going on with the world right now, voicing my beliefs and my support for what is good in the world, and not getting trapped in this idea of like, this is who I am beyond the screen. And I remember one day, this scene when Scott is showing Kinsey the splattering movie in that room, and Eden comes up and just says that horrible little monologue about like, just because you want to be a director doesn't mean that you are one. And she says it with a smile on her face. And I remember doing that scene and walking out of the scene when they called cut, and the sound guy said, oh, I love how you play a bitch, because you play it with a smile on your face. And I was like, well, as long as like I'm just playing life with a smile on my face and not being a bitch, because I just having to turn it off, of course. But like, outside of, like I said, like outside of acting, like it's important and imperative to make sure that I'm counteracting that with who I really am and doing all I can to counteract that with doing good and being a part of, you know, all of the things that I can be a part of in the way of anti-bullying organizations. Cause I do not want a bunch of Edens running around the world and being like, oh, it's okay. I saw it on Netflix. Like, I'm like, oh no, that's not what I stand for. So, yeah.
That's really cool. I mean, speaking to the way, why they picked you for the character is your natural, you know, like let's do it with a smile. Let's all have fun. Let's all laugh. Combined mm-hmm. with just this evil, like, you know, the nastiness, like, that normally it would, like, a person would just be, like, scowling or very angry when they're saying these things, and you're like, nah, ha, ha, ha. Like, it's all funny, but it's all mm-hmm. terrible. That adds a lot to the character, so that's pretty cool, too. But, yeah, obviously, you know, bullying is wrong, and then, you know, people should be who they are, and yada, yada, like, it's very important mm-hmm. that you see your character is wrong, but it's cool that that's why I feel like maybe that's one of the reasons why you got the role.
Yeah, I just don't want to condone people being horrible because that's, you know, I think it's interesting that I look back on who I was in high school, and I wasn't a very happy kid. I wasn't good in school, so I always acted out because of that, you know, as kids do. You know, when you're not doing good in something, you become the class clown. And I was very much that kind of kid. And the things that I did at certain times, like, I've pulled from that as Eden, and I've worked very hard through the past few years. Like, I graduated high school about 5 years ago, and that was like a really dark period in my life. And I've taken parts of that person I was in high school and implemented them in Eden. And that's actually helped me further understand the reasons I acted that way. And apologize to my past self instead of, you know, regretting it, learning from it. And I want to do all I can outside of, you know, being on set to say, you know, I'm not a perfect human. I was in certain ways this, you know, not the greatest person, but I'm learning from that. And why was I that way? Why is Eden this way? Why might a girl look at Eden and love who Eden is? Like, some of these fan accounts on Instagram being like, I love Eden Hawkins. I'm like, no, like, this is not good. So yeah, just identifying like the subconscious of a character like that has helped me understand myself better and other people, and living life with more compassion and understanding that people aren't, when they act this way, it's not usually a personal thing. It's something that they're struggling with. And so I think adding that depth to Eden is something that's really important. And going forward with season two and how Eden's going to be, you know, in season two, I have no idea yet. I don't have the scripts, which is just like, I want the scripts. I want to see what happens. But it's going to be really interesting fighting Eden's inner demons.
Just a few more things and then we'll let you go. John, you had a question?
I have a question about another project that you were involved with. You had a role on the Amazon show The Boys, and I was a big fan of the show. I'm a big fan of the comic book. How was that experience working on that series? Because they are night and day. As Brian mentioned, Lock and Key, very family friendly. The Boys, not so much.
Well, no, but I feel like Eden would fit in The Boys.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because what's night and day is like Eden is promiscuous. She's out there. She's herself. She's unapologetic. And then this, I didn't even have a name in The Boys. It was just older girl. It was one day of filming, and this character is like, she's at a Jesus convention. Like, she's probably never seen a naked boy in her life, let alone look at her. Like, she's very pure. But at the same time, like, that character, even though I had only one line, I kind of went into like the psychology of like asking like that line of like the line in The Boys was, well, did you have sex with him? Like, she's wanting to know more about Starlight. She's wanting to know more about like this world beyond the one that she's been raised to believe in. And I think that character was kind of fighting with what everyone else was telling her and fighting with herself of just being like, well, I want to know more, but being surrounded by people who were telling her like, no, this is how you should be. And like the pastor in that amazing scene, just shoots down Starlight for speaking her truth. And is saying like, you know, lie to these kids. And yeah, that was a really interesting day because it was like this huge festival fairgrounds of just Jesus convention. And I'm not a religious person. So I'm like walking around and I'm like, what is going on? But yeah, that was a really, really fun day on set. It was a long one, but it was very.
Did you enjoy the Jesus Festival? I mean, like, did they have this stuff like actually going? Like, you know, like, were there like carnival rides for Jesus and stuff like that? Like, did they just make a day of it?
No, actually, like it was a full set, but it was like there were Jesus pins, and it was just like all of these pamphlets and things, and like everything that, you know. It's funny when you watch like a lot of shows, you think that it's actually something that's happening and that they just like rented it out for a day, but like they make these full sets, like everything down to every single little pin is all printed just for the set, just for filming. And yeah, it was super funny because I'm not a religious person by any means, so walking around this Jesus convention in like this very like good Catholic or Christian schoolgirl, whatever, and I'm like, oh, this is not who I am, but this is, I'm an actor. So it was funny.
No, I think they're missing out, you know, like they could have just had like, they already made everything. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like everything is real. Like, yeah. it's all there. Have Jesus Day, sell tickets. Like, you guys are missing out on an opportunity. Just let people know, like, hey, you're getting this discounted price for Jesus Day because we're filming everything. And then, like,
well, yeah, that part of Ontario would probably be super down. Just like, let the churches know, like, we've got everything ready for you.
You know, yeah. Producers out there, if you're looking for ways to recoup some funds, and you're have a you know, some sort of festival in the middle of your movie, maybe just sell tickets.
Same with carnivals. Yeah, exactly.
Halia, before we let you go, last final question. Can you tell us a little bit about your music career?
Oh, yeah. Well, there's nothing, I don't really have much out online right now. I do have a SoundCloud just under Halia Jones that I create these little things called mini muses. So I don't know how to produce. I'm learning, I'm teaching myself how to produce. But like I create these little things with samples and loops and little piano things. And so I've posted a few on my SoundCloud. And then this summer, my brother, who's an incredible multi-instrumentalist and producer, we're working on a bunch of songs. So we just did 3 songs this week that we're really excited about. And we're working on like having a schedule for every single, you know, day almost to be in the studio and creating music. And then we're hoping to release a bunch of that as of next springtime, summer. So 2021, not 100% sure, because depending on filming, I need to make sure that those coincide with each other. But yeah, it's an exciting new little venture that I'm really hoping to get out into the world soon. And that, along with Lock and Key, are all pretty exciting projects going on right now in my life.
Halia, where can folks find you online?
Basically, my Instagram is the key to my world. Instagram, yeah, Halia Jones is all it is. And then also my Twitter, and those are basically the top spots to keep up with everything.
Cool. Well, thank you very much for spending some time this morning to sit down and chat with us about Lock and Key and your music and all of your other projects. And we appreciate it so much.
Thank you so much for having me. It was fun.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I think we're at a good point for me to interrupt for a moment to remind you that this podcast is brought to you by the great sponsor, World's Greatest Comics. As you know, they're the one-stop shop for all of your comic book related needs. They've got single issues, collections, graphic novels, back issues, posters, toys, collectibles, comic book supplies, basically everything you need for your fandom, they got. So just swing on over to the store. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. Or you could check them out online. just go to WGComics.com or find them on Facebook, again, at WGComics. And no matter how you interact with the staff, whether in person or online, please let them know that you heard about the store from me, John Orlando, on the PVD cast. Jason, on the line with us tonight is our very special guest, Miss Lori Lathine. Lori, how are you this evening?
I'm doing great. Doing well. It's not quite evening where I am. But I'm doing great.
Yes, I did forget about the time difference in LA, didn't I?
Yeah. Well, actually, I'm not in LA. I'm on an island, but it's LA time. I'm on Catalina Island.
Oh, is it a little vacation time?
No, it's not. We've had a house here for the last 40 years. And it is a vacation island, but you know, I'm here usually during the summertime.
Oh, that's cool. That's really cool.
Yeah, it is. It's awesome.
I would love to go to live on an island.
It's good. You know, it's interesting because it's a party island. I mean, mm-hmm. People come here to get wasted and have a good time. That's basically what it is. And so, you know, with this whole COVID thing going on, it's really hard to drink with a mask on. So, you know, I'm waiting to see if anybody comes up with something real interesting.
Yes. How is the COVID situation on the West Coast, if I may ask real quick?
Well, there's lots of new cases. Just from what I can tell you, they just opened up the island a couple of weeks ago. And what I can tell you, what I've experienced is that most people are not wearing their masks and you know, they want to kind of go back to normal, even though it's not normal, you know? So it's interesting because, you know, I walk down the street and there's the beach and people sit on the beach and, you know, it's they're all kind of crowded up together. So that's kind of what's going on.
That's how it is here in Ohio too. People walking around without their masks. People don't seem to care very much.
You know what? Listen, I just do my thing, and you know, I'm not out to correct anybody, or you know, I just you know, kind of weave in and out as I see fit.
My favorite thing is the mask that just covers the mouth, but the nose is still exposed.
I see that a lot. I just go, yeah, okay. You know, so it sounds like we've got a lot of the same, no matter where we are.
Very much so. Well, Lori, we've asked you to come on because, you know, we love the show Matlock, and you were in the very first episode, the pilot, and we want to talk about Matlock. I also have some questions about a few of your other projects because you've done a ton of things in your career, but I'm going to start off with a very easy question. How did you get started in acting?
Okay, so the very island I'm talking about is where I was over here. My parents used to run a place called the Sand Trap, which is still going. It's kind of a midway stop between the golf course. You know, you tee off and then you hit the Sand Trap about halfway through and sit down and have a beer and serve food. So that's where I worked. And I had a friend over here, and I was one day looking at commercials on television. And I thought, I could do that. I could do that. It wasn't like I had always had this thing for acting or I was, you know, a professionally trained actress. I just thought, you know what? I'm going to try this. It looks easy. I mean, you know, LA's not that far away. And so, like, you know, being as innocent and naive as I was, I just, I kind of made my way up there and started working. It was that easy.
And you have done a ton of things. And one of the items that I noticed when I was doing some research is you did a lot of 1980s TV shows, like from, I mean, the A-Team, Murder, She Wrote, Different Strokes, Magnum P.I., Dukes of Hazzard, The Master, which, by the way, is a favorite of mine that most people forget about. But I remember The Master as a kid. I was a kid and, like, ninjas. I mean, as a kid in the 80s, yeah. It was a show about ninjas.
Were you into Ninja Turtles?
I have a respect for Ninja Turtles, but I wasn't so much into Ninja Turtles as much as just straight up ninjas. Ninja Turtles were a little bit later when I was probably in middle schools when those hit. So I was a little bit past the ninja phase by that point. Yeah. But as a little kid.
Yeah. Good for you, man. Yeah, The Master, not very many people remember that show.
What was there a show that you wanted to get on that you never got the opportunity to?
I think that I kind of wanted to do The Love Boat, not because I liked the show so much, but I kind of thought that I would be on a boat and I could like cruise around or something. But no, not really. I mean, I just, you know, whatever came along, I was up for, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It was an interesting time to be in show business, and it was fun. It was really fun.
So last week we reviewed the first episode of Matlock, Diary of a Perfect Murder, and I'm watching the show, and the pilot has some rough moments in it, but the standouts were you, Keen, and Andy, and I was like, I am so excited to see more of her as Matlock's daughter, because I didn't remember the show very much, but you're only in this one episode. Tell me what it was like working on the show.
It was great. Andy, okay, so Andy, you know, he was a good guy. You know, I've heard a lot of mixed things about him, you know, but he was very, so, okay, let me back up a little bit. So the reason I was not their first choice to be Charlene. Actually, they wanted Linda Pearl. But from what I understand, this is what I was told, is that she had gotten another pilot, so she couldn't do it. So they went and they, having auditions, and I auditioned. And, you know, I remember I auditioned, and then I got called back. And eventually, I had to meet Andy. And I was really nervous. You know, because I mean, I grew up watching Andy Griffith and, you know, oh God, I love that show. Aunt Bee and, you know, Barney and all that. So, I went, and he lived in this, where he was living was kind of in this big sort of southern plantation house right down the, not too far, you know, away from me, but it was big and it was huge. And it was like, I was meeting this guy and he was really nice, you know? And so when I went to do the show, he like watched me. He would give me direction. He would say, why don't you try it this way, you know, because I think it meant a lot to him. He wanted the show to go. And since he was the center of the show, he wanted to really make sure the people that surrounded him was the right fit, you know, but I was not the first choice.
So how did the change occur? I'm assuming from what you explained, Lori, was that maybe Linda Pearl's other pilot didn't go through and they decided to recast? Or are you aware of what the decision process was for that?
Well, I didn't know until they told me later that was kind of what the deal. That's what was told to me.
Okay.
You know, so her pilot didn't go and that's who they wanted. And you know what? She was great. You know, I can totally see why they would have wanted her because, you know, she had a lot more experience than I did, you know, and yeah. But from what I understand, I didn't really follow the show too much after that. But from what I understand, there was there was different Charlenes throughout the season.
Yes, there were. Yes, we actually talked about that, Jason, didn't we? That we thought for a while there were like multiple daughters to Ben Matlock.
it was kind of like a sideshow or something. It's like, okay, who's going to be Charlene this week? No,
yeah.
But you know what? He was so particular about how it was going because the show represented him, you know, and I think that he felt that there was a lot of weight on his shoulders and he really wanted it to go, the show. You know, I can't say that I blame him.
Definitely one of the highlights of the pilot for sure. You've got some of the best laugh moments.
Oh, thanks. Thank you.
Yes, we did enjoy the one particular scene where Ben takes his client into the men's room and you follow suit. And the quip is when the other gentleman comes in, it's okay. She's a lawyer. which was very, very humorous. We enjoyed that, didn't we, Jason?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's good. No, it was fun. It was a really fun show to work on. And, you know, I liked all the folks that worked on it. And, you know, it was a learning ground for me. I mean, to work with someone like Andy, who'd been in the show business for so long, I mean, I would ask him a lot of questions. Like, how do you do this? Or how, you know, it was, and he was nice about it.
Well, I'm going to ask about another role that you had in the movie The Day After, which many people may have forgotten about this film, but it was an ABC movie of the week about the nuclear war between Russia and the United States. So how did you end up getting the role of Denise for that project?
Again, I auditioned, and they were looking for somebody that sort of had that Midwestern girl next door look. And okay. I guess at that time I fit the bill, and I read for it several times. And I got the role. I had no idea what I was getting into, by the way, you know, because I didn't read the script. I wasn't given the script. I was just given the sides to the script, you know, for my part. And so I didn't quite get what it was about, you know, until I got the part. And, you know, the director, Nicholas Meyer, is such a good guy. He had the vision. And so, you know, he had a lot of people. He wasn't going for big names. He was just trying to go for what he thought would make the most sense within the story, because the story, it was about the story, not so much about, you know, the actors.
And I recall a lot of, again, I was 7, I believe, when the movie came out, but I do remember that there was a lot of controversy surrounding the film because of the subject matter. So did you feel some of that buzz or that controversy while you were making the film, or was that kind of something that you didn't recognize until after filming had wrapped?
Well, you know, we tried to, as much as we could, keep it light on the set, you know, because there was a lot of stuff. I mean, I had scenes where we were filming on actual missile silos, where there were nuclear missiles underneath on farms.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, it's kind of like, wow, this is surreal. And most of my scenes took place on a pig farm. So, I mean, and it was a big pig farm. So it was interesting. I did a lot of work in the cellar. So, you know, it was like I didn't really know what was going on within the bigger part of the film because each – there was a lot of different separate stories that came together as this, you know, there was the, you know, the Jason Robards, and then there was, you know, the family that I was in on the pig farm. And, you know, there was just different stories going on. But I think that the scene that was hard to do, where I actually felt, you know, when I actually went back to my room and really cried, was the scene where I escape from the cellar and I go out into the nuclear fallout after the bomb had gone out, and I was in total denial, and, you know, I tripped over a dead cow, and Steve Guttenberg comes after me and brings me back down, you know, and I'm kind of in this other world, you know, and that was tough. That was a tough scene to do.
Yeah, and from what I understand, a lot of people, including director Nicholas Meyer, claimed that they had some, I guess you could say, pessimism about things while doing research, while filming and whatnot. And I mean, obviously, it's a heavy subject material. And, you know, during that time, let's be honest, that was a real threat to many of us.
Yeah, it was interesting. And plus, you know, I mean, after I escaped and went out into the nuclear fallout, then there was the scenes where I was in the gym and, you know, obviously I was sick and dying. And, you know, I remember looking, getting the makeup applied and the wig and everything. And it was like, oh my God, this is horrible. This is, you know, and it was filmed in a gym with other people that were laying there sick. And it was like, you know, I just was like, oh my God, let's just get this over with. Let's just get this over with. Cause, you know, and we filmed for, you know, pretty long, not a long time, but it was, you know, it was a long time in Kansas. So there was, you know, some days were much lighter on the set, and then there were the heavier days. that were on the set. So yeah, it was interesting.
Well, I'd like to just talk just a few more minutes here with you and talk about another project that I'm a huge fan of the source material. So I just want to ask real quickly, you also had a role on the after school special, The Wave.
Yes.
So if I may ask, were you a fan of that book before getting the role, or was the fact that you got the role, then you kind of did some research and you read it, or what was your background with the story of The Wave?
I didn't know anything about it. And so the way that I approached that, because that was one of my earlier roles. And, you know, if I had to pick two roles that really like have stayed with me, it's The Wave and The Day After. And so The Wave, I just let it unfold as it did in the story. I didn't do much research on it because I wanted to live it out as the story went along. And that was a real eye opener for me because it was based on an experiment in Palo Alto. And so, you know, these both of these stories have even though they were made quite some time ago, both of the films, it's still as prevalent today, if not so more prevalent today. And it saddens me that these are still things that are being talked about.
Yeah, most definitely. If I may ask, when they decided to go ahead and start shooting The Wave, was there any difference in the way in which they produced it, say, rather than The Day After or your episode of Matlock or whatnot? Did you notice that because it was one of your first roles, or did you not notice that there were any major differences?
Well, it was an after school special, so it was on a much shorter shooting schedule. Mm-hmm. And it was basically a lot of the stuff was shot in a classroom so it wasn't a lot of different places that you had to go shoot, a lot of, you know, different locations. And because it was in a classroom, you know, we got all kind of close and stuff. So it really, the way that I kind of remember that it was shot more in sequence than anything. So it sort of unfolded, like I said, as it went along, you know, and Bruce Davidson was just great in that. And, we were friends, you know. I haven't seen him in quite some time, but he was just such a good guy, you know, and he kind of guided us all.
I want to ask about a post-acting career, but first off, you worked with a lot of people in the 80s. You actually worked with two of the three men from Three Men and a Baby. Is there anybody that you wanted to work with that just never got to cross paths with?
Probably Greg Harrison, because he's a fellow Catalina guy. I think he was, what was that show he was in? Trapper John, MD, I think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think you're correct. Yeah.
Him. Because from what I understand, he lived right down the street from where I lived over here. And, you know, two actors coming off the same island, that's something, you know.
And the question that I know a lot of people have is, how awesome is Tom Selleck's mustache?
It is so good. And it was so perfect. I couldn't believe it. It's like, how did you get that perfect mustache? He was a good guy.
Not everybody grew off a mustache. Either.
I know. I mean, it was a really good mustache. Definitely.
So it looks like you went back to school after you left acting?
I did. I did. And got my degree in psychology and practiced that for a while. And right now I'm just laying low, taking it easy.
Very cool.
Well, one final question, Lori, and then we'll wrap things up. If anyone came to you that was an aspiring actor or actress and they asked for one piece of advice, what advice would you give them?
Just keep showing up, you know, just keep showing up, you know, because I remember back then, it's like so many people based, you know, if they got the job or not on who they were. And you know what? It's just a job. You know, if you don't get a job, it doesn't reflect who you are as a person. It just means you weren't right for the job, you know? So just keep showing up.
Well, there you go.
Absolutely. Yeah. Great advice.
Yes, most definitely. Lori, do you have any social media outlets or anything that you would like to plug real quick?
No, not really. I'm good. You know, I'm around. If people want to find me, they end up finding me just like you guys did.
I did. I typed in the name and hoped that I had the right person.
Yeah, no, you did. And then, yeah, you were persistent. And you know what? We eventually hooked up right for today. So it was great.
It was. Thank you so much for getting back to me, too.
Oh, you're so welcome. And good luck with your podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you, okay. Lori Lafine. Once again, we appreciate you taking some time out of your busy schedule to sit down and chat with us. Thank you so very much.
All right, my dears. I'll talk to you soon.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Safe. Bye-bye.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. My conversations with Halea Jones and Lori Lafine. And I hope that you enjoyed them. And I would like to thank once again the Three Geeks Podcast for letting me collaborate with them when we sat down and chatted via Zoom with Halea. I liked both these particular conversations because I thought they were just so insightful, especially when it comes to movie making and TV making. So I appreciate you checking them out. And you know what? You got to let me know. And I mean that. I know I say that pretty much every single closing on PVDcast episodes, but you got to let me know if you liked what you heard today. Because I'm planning on doing a few more of these, but if people were like, John, it's really not our cup of tea. We like the old standard format of one guest talking about their projects. You won't hurt my feelings if you don't like it, but you got to let me know. And likewise, if you did love it, let me know as well. And there's a couple different avenues you can take to contact me to let me know if you liked this episode or you didn't like this episode. First of all, you can shoot me an email. Email address is johnorlando@pvdcast.com. You can find me on Twitter. My personal Twitter handle is @pvdmvp. You can even leave me a message over on the Facebook page of this podcast, @pvdcast. And you could probably even leave me a message over on the Instagram. Again, just search for pvdcast. And I need to let you know about where you can get your hands on this podcast, just in case maybe you want to tell a few folks about it. It's available at pvdcast.com, the online home of yours truly, and through all the major podcasting platforms like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, iHeartRadio app, radio.com app, Google Podcasts, just basically any podcast platform should have it. Just search for PVDcast. Sometimes you have to put my name after PVDcast John Orlando, and you should find it. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. Rating and reviewing helps me out in the algorithm. Subscribing means you never miss an episode. And just in case you say, I don't know, John, all that sounds real complicated. Well, there's an easier way you can hear it. You could check out the PVDcast every Monday night at 9:30 Eastern Standard Time on Redline Radio. So just go to redlineradiollc.com, listen through Facebook, Redline Radio LLC, or download the app through the Google Play Store. Just again, look for Redline Radio, tap, download it. You can take the station with you wherever you go. All right. With that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. I thank each and every one of you for listening, and I'll chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous. Stay independent and stay safe and healthy. Has been a production of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC. Copyright 2021.